2 a.m., Westport Elementary School, Westport, Connecticut. What should be a place of happiness is instead the scene of a horrific sight. Two young children, students at the school, murdered and hung up on the playground swings as a display, a warning, a sign placed upon their bloody corpses, muties. The silence is broken by a figure dropping from the sky, Magneto. He steps from the shadows and exhales at the sight, tears forming in his eyes. He raises his hands and begins to bring the bodies down from their display, resting them on the ground.
An execution, not the first, far from the last. Only this time, the victims are children. So young, so innocent to know such terror and pain. Their only crime was that they were born. And for all my vaunted power, I was unable to save them. No more. No more will die. But those responsible for this atrocity, whatever the cost, however long it takes, I will hunt them down and make them pay.
New York City. The Stryker Building, headquarters of the worldwide Evangelical Stryker Crusade. In his large, extravagant office, Reverend William Stryker reads from his Bible.
If there be found among you man or woman that hath wrought wickedness in the sight of the Lord thy God in transgressing his covenant, and hath gone and served other gods and worshipped them, either the sun or moon or any of the hosts of heaven, which I have not commanded, and it be told thee, and thou behold it to be true, then shalt thou bring forth that man and that woman which hath committed that wicked thing, and shall stone them with stones till they die. Thy kingdom come, Lord, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Yes?
The briefing tapes are ready, Reverend.
Well, then run them, Jess. And would you be a dear and have some sandwiches and coffee sent up, please? I got so involved in writing Sunday's sermon, I forgot to break for dinner.
Stryker spends the next hour watching tapes of the X-Men, past and present. He does not know who sent them, only that the biographies are well researched. It displays names, powers, strengths and weaknesses, even details on Xavier and the school.
If there is a heart of the beast, these X-Men and people like them are it.
Oh, I'm sorry to disturb you, Reverend, but you're due at ABC Studios for tonight's broadcast.
Thanks, Jess.
The woman enters and helps the Reverend put on his jacket.
Those are the X-Men?
They certainly are. But God willing, if all goes well, not for very much longer.
Xavier's School for the Gifted. The dining room.
Professor, Wolverine is dangerous. If Storm hadn't have talked him down, he would have gutted every one of those Brotherhood members in front of everyone. Right there on the Congress floor.
Therefore, Angel, we should abandon him?
I hear my name.
Stay out of this. It's about you, not to you.
We got a problem, Wings.
Oh, we sure do. You are a killer. A stone-cold killer who is just looking for somewhere to channel his rage. You're only staying here because Xavier provides hapless victims to you on a regular basis.
Warren, that's enough. You have made your point. But Wolverine has more than proved himself as part of this team.
Oh, he has? By gutting everyone in his path? How about we ask the Hellfire Club what kind of a man he is? Those that survived? Professor, you know us better than we know ourselves. And I'd like to think you have a good reason for keeping him around. And I'd like to think that reason isn't just that he carves up your enemies.
He has shown restraint on many occasions, Warren.
Well, none that I have seen. He even threatened Storm when she tried to talk him out of it.
But I did talk him out of it. A minor miracle given what I have seen of his berserker rages.
Look, Blondie. I know you were here before I was. But like Iceman, you better get used to the fact that us new X-Men are here to stay. This isn't your team anymore.
You're right. It isn't. And I have no place in it anymore.
Warren!
I'm sorry, Professor. but I will not be a part of any team that has Wolverine on it. Goodbye. Good luck.
Within the hour, Warren Worthington is gone.
Another one bites the dust.
There are now no more original X-Men left. I always felt comfort, a connection to their history in having them with us.
Now it's just us. I don't see the problem. Say, where's Petey? Not seen him all day.
I asked him to pick up Kitty from dance class after he collected his sister from the airport.
His sister?
Yes, she's coming to stay for the week. The professor is considering opening the school as a school again.
She's a mutant?
That is what he intends to find out this coming week.
Yippee. How many kids are going to be in this class?
I'm not sure, but at least Kitty will have classmates of her own age.
73 Wellington Road, in the suburban town of Salem Center, where former prima ballerina Stevie Hunter maintains both a home and dance studio. Crashing through the floor falls a startled boy, a chair, and one red-faced young mutant girl.
Take it back! Take back what you said, Danny. You're so help me. I'll rearrange your face.
Kitty, stop this. Have you lost your mind?
Leave me alone. Come on, Danny. Let's hear it. While you can still talk.
Katya, what are you doing?
Huh? Peter?
Kitty looks up as Colossus approaches from the street with his blonde younger sister beside him. But the distraction allows the boy to strike Kitty in the face.
Ow! You lousy... Now you're really gonna get it.
Try it, you little tramp.
You will do nothing, either of you.
But you heard what he said, Peter.
That's enough. Settle down.
She started it, Miss Hunter. She just jumped at me.
I may have swung first, but he started it by running his mouth.
What exactly did you say, Danny? Explain.
I was talking about the Striker Crusade and all the good it does.
And you believe that?
My folks and I are members. What of it?
Tell her the rest, creep. About how Reverend Stryker's gonna save us humanity from the godless hordes of mutant kind.
Well, he is. Muties are evil. They deserve whatever they get. You wanna make something of it, mutie lover?
You both have made your points. I suggest you let it rest there, young man.
Sure. Whatever you say, sir. Next time, pride.
Peter now reaches down to help Kitty up.
Forgive me, Katya. I simply did not want to see the boy hurt you.
With your training and powers, you could have crippled the boy.
He'd have done the same to me, I bet.
Come on, let's get you inside and cleaned up.
How can you all be so calm? Didn't you hear what he said?
They're only words, child.
Suppose he called me a N-word lover, Stevie. Would you be so damn tolerant then?
Kitty!
Peter calls after her as Kitty Pride runs off into the night.
Interesting friends you have here in America, big brother.
You two has better go after her, Peter. See she gets home safe.
Kitty was upset, Stevie. She did not think about what you were saying. She did not mean...
Of course she did, my friend. She meant every word. And she was right.
As the group parts ways, two shadowy figures watch Stevie re-enter the studio from a parked white van across the street.
The Hunter woman's going back inside. One shot would do the trick and she'd never know what hit her. With a silencer, no one would hear a thing.
She isn't a mutant, partner. Leave her be.
She's worse. Treats those mutie scum like real human beings.
Our mission is surveillance, not assassination. Be patient, George. Once we've dealt with the muties, there'll be plenty of time for traitors like her.
Mission Central. This is Rover Team 3. Colossus' sister and the Pride Girl are returning to the school. Situation normal. Operation Headhunter can proceed as scheduled.
Westchester County Airport. Scott Summers steps out of the crowd of arrivals and into the main body of the airport itself.
I probably should have called ahead, let them know I was coming. But I wanted to surprise them. It won't be for long, just a visit. But I wanted to see how my old team are getting on. After I heard about what happened in Washington, I... Huh?
Scott Summers looks up as he passes the departure desk. Seeing Warren Worthington standing there, he finishes his transaction, thanking the woman and turning. The two eyelines meet.
Warren?
Scott! What are you doing here?
Angel walks toward him, pulling his suitcase behind him.
I was about to ask you the same thing. Where are you headed?
Home, actually. Look, I tried to make it work, but it's just not the same. But if I knew you were coming back, I'd,
I'm not back, Warren. Just visiting. Won't you stay another night or two?
I just paid for my ticket. Besides, my last words were, well, they were pretty final. I do have time for a drink, though, if you want to catch up.
Sure. Coffee?
This sounds good.
A few miles outside of town, Peter Rasputin turns off Greymalkin Lane and up the school's drive. The estate, sprawled along 3 miles of lakefront, has been in Xavier's family for generations, and has become a much-beloved home to the X-Men as well. The three head inside, joining the rest of the team in the main living area.
That's some shiner you're sporting, Pumpkin. Scrap or accident?
Scrap.
Fair fight?
I guess so.
You win?
Nope.
How come?
I guess I don't have your killer instincts, Wolverine.
Kitty now begins to head up the stairs, a slight heaviness in her stride.
I wasn't even fighting an evil mutant, or supervillain, or murder machine, Logan. Just a kid with a big mouth. It was no big deal. I'm gonna wash up and change. Won't be long.
While Kitty's gone, Peter introduces his sister, and the two explain what had gone down. Kitty, now having returned, the group all sit down in front of the TV. Logan mulls over the story as he puffs on a cigar. Nightcrawler, too, as he watches the screen from his perch on the banister.
Popcorn, anyone? Kitty?
No thanks, Ileana.
Hush, you two. The program's beginning.
Good evening. I'm John Cheever. Our topic tonight, mutants. And here with me to discuss it, Professor Charles Xavier, renowned authority on mutant genetics, and Reverend William Stryker, founder of the Stryker Crusade, one of the foremost and influential evangelical ministries. Professor, let's open with you.
Thank you. Firstly, Mr. Cheever, mutants per se are not a monolithic group possessing one set of attitudes or goals. They are individuals, as are we all, and should be judged as such.
Now there you go, Charles. These individuals of yours possess some pretty terrifying powers. And how are we common folk to defend ourselves against them? If I may quote from the report of Senator Robert Kelly's Ad Hoc Committee on Mutant Activities, the ever-increasing numbers of mutants pose as clear and present danger both to the United States and to the socio-political order of the world as we know it.
Right.
Gosh, Kitty. You don't look dangerous.
This ain't a joke, kid. The sucker means business.
Quiet! I don't want to miss anything.
They've gone to commercial! They should have given the professor a chance to respond.
At the airport lounge, the two veteran X-Men also watch.
It's the Trask debate all over again.
Yeah, maybe worse. This guy doesn't have malfunctioning robots to prove he's mad.
Over the remainder of the program, the heated debate continues, and those in the control room have their hands on the switches. The power.
After all, Charles, is it fair to even call mutants human? The genetic term for them is, I believe, Homo superior, which relates to a different species altogether.
Cue camera one. You think Xavier's making a convincing case?
Yeah, but who's listening? Stryker knows television, and he's playing to the audience. He comes across as such a nice, personable guy. Too bad, because the man's message is pretty damn scary, if you ask me.
That's all for us. Thank you, and good night.
Good riddance. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm suddenly in the mood to break something. Anyone up for a late-night Danger Room sesh?
Sounds good to me!
Take Stryker's remarks about mutants not being human to the ultimate. And we got no rights under the law.
Indeed. No right to have any rights or protection.
We could be exterminated like rats. Legally murdered.
The group continues to mull it over as they change into their battle attire.
It seems impossible, but Stryker's so popular. Millions of people believe his every word.
To think us evil, simply because we exist? This is madness.
I have known such fear and hatred from birth, but time does not make it any easier to take.
Everyone's spooked, and with good reason.
After wishing Warren farewell, the man once called Cyclops gets himself a taxi into town. He quickly texts Aurora to let her know that he is coming. She replies with surprise and tells him she and Xavier are at the TV studio. Ordering the taxi to take him into New York City itself, he agrees to the extra cost.
Storm, I'm on my way.
Did you see it?
I did. I watched it at the airport. With Warren, actually.
Fortunate timing. A shame one of his oldest friends wasn't able to talk him into staying either. I tried.
I know.
Aurora turns herself away from the TV studio. The lights now up as the production crew bustles around her.
A fascinating discussion, Professor. I'm sorry we had to cut it short.
I too, Mr. Cheever. I fear Reverend Stryker made by far the better presentation.
It didn't go well, did it, Scott?
In short, no. We were slaughtered, Aurora. Xavier was speaking to people's ideals, Stryker to their fears. But on camera, the professor looked so grim and foreboding. Almost scary. I think he ended up making Stryker's case for him. Let's hope the damage isn't irreparable.
Indeed. Where would you like to meet?
What's nearby to you?
Central Park?
Sounds good.
Okay. Meet you there, Scott. It will be good to see you.
Scott! Scott is in New York!
See you then.
As she hangs up, Xavier wheels himself up as a woman accidentally bumps into Aurora.
Oh, sorry. My fault, Miss Monroe. I should have been watching where I was going.
No harm done.
As Storm nods and wheels Xavier away, Reverend Stryker makes his way over to the same woman.
Everything all right, Anne?
They're meeting with Scott Summers in Central Park. We'll take them there, sir.
Splendid. A bonus mutant. Our size screens prevented Xavier from scanning our thoughts, so the surprise should be total.
Shortly, Xavier's Rolls-Royce pulls up to Central Park. A new passenger gets in with a smile, shaking hands with the professor from the back seat, and hugs Aurora.
It is good to see you home, son.
I just wanted to pop in, see how things were going after the incident at the Senate. Seems like I got here just in time. How serious do you think this Stryker guy is?
Potentially quite grave, Scott. In the studio, I sensed some sort of device blocking me from reading his thoughts.
Perhaps it was just a precaution?
Perhaps. But if so, how did he learn of my powers? And what else does he know?
Home, Professor?
Yes, I think so. I need time to think, and the others will be pleased to see Mr. Summers.
As the long black car pulls away, a red van begins to follow them.
Stay on their tail, Rocco, but not too close. We don't want to give our friends the slightest cause for alarm. Wait till we're out of sight.
An evil mutant like Magneto can be confronted physically. We have no such option with Stryker, whose stocks in trade are words and ideas. We can only counter them with saner, gentler words of our own, and hope for the best.
Scott! Aurora! I sense hostile thought patterns ahead of us. It's an ambush!
One shot at the tires is all it takes to send the car spinning into the lamppost ahead.
Professor, Storm, are you okay?
I'm here, but Xavier is out cold.
Damn it! Door's jammed. I'll have to use my eyes. Soon as we're clear, get airborne and get to the mansion. Tell the others what happened.
But you...
Do it!
How easily he falls back into giving me orders. We shall discuss this later.
With a blast of his eyes, Scott Summers takes off the door, climbing out as Storm follows with Xavier in her arms. But as soon as they are clear, a sniper rifle takes aim from the van.
Scott!
With two shots, the leaders of the X-Men, past and present, are down, their car being destroyed behind them.
Perfect. Rocco, notify the Reverend. Mission accomplished.
Back at the mansion, the team is now looking over their danger room scores after another successful session.
Ugh, this workout is just what I needed. I feel so much better. What's with you, Wolverine? You did real good.
Yeah, mein friend. What's the secret of your success?
Clean living, of course.
You're not taking this very seriously.
Why should I?
Wolverine asks, walking away, cutting the head of a mannequin that stood in for a civilian in the session.
Games are for kids.
There are times, guys, when that man scares the hell out of me.
I have it! It's probably Aurora, the professor. Xavier School, Kurt Wagner speaking. May I help you? What?
Moments later.
Tovarish, is something the matter?
That was the police. There's been an accident. Professor Xavier, Aurora, and Scott are dead!
The next day, Kitty Pryde sits alone on the mansion grounds, crying into her knees.
Hi. The others have gone into New York. We're on our own. Kitty, are you okay?
I'm alive. Does that count?
I'm so sorry. Do you want company?
If I had Ilyana, I would have stayed in the damn house.
Oh, sorry. I know we have just met, but you are the only person of my age here. I know what has happened is terrible, but I thought perhaps you would like to talk to someone like me as well. I was wrong. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Oh, God.
Kitty turns and grabs the relating stranger, pulling the girl into a hug as she sobs.
I guess I should be used to this, accept it as a reality of the life we lead. But after all we've been through, to have them killed in a lousy car crash. And the really crazy thing is, I still don't believe it's true.
Kitty throws a stone at the water, watching it skip and sink.
I hate death.
There isn't very much you can do about it.
Yeah, your brother told me something like that the other week.
Dah? Peter once told me, if not for the depths of grief, how could truly measure the heights of joy?
Too bad that cuts both ways. You speak great English, Ilyana, just like he does.
You care for my brother, don't you?
We're good friends. Besides, he's like 5 years older than me.
You're blushing.
Am not.
Oh, Mother Volga, I forgot. One of the reasons I came to find you, I saw something strange along the ridge.
Hours later, the two teenage girls approach a whirling device, covered by foliage for camouflage.
What is it?
I don't know. A camera, maybe? That looks like a transponder on top. I think it's a monitoring device, aimed at the mansion.
Who put it there? And why?
Beats me. But let's find out.
With a thought, Kitty faces herself into the ground, then comes up, under, and through the device.
That was impressive. Now what?
Now we wait for someone to come fix the thing.
And we'll be here to greet them?
Don't worry, Ilyana. I'll protect you.
Central Park, Manhattan. Peter Rasputin and Logan are gathered in street clothes, looking over the wreckage behind the police blockade.
What was Cyclops doing with him anyway?
The cops pulled up his texts. He came back last night to surprise us. Hell of a time to show up.
And a terrible way to return to die. Just like Jean. What are you doing down there, my friend?
Finding answers. I don't care what the flaming cops say, Petey. This was no accident.
Does it matter, Tovarish? Our friends are just as dead.
Three corpses were found in the wreck, pal. But they weren't our friends. Car totally consumed by fire, bodies burned beyond recognition. Very nice. Very neat. Trouble is, the scents are wrong.
I do not understand.
It's a con. Someone went to a hell of a lot of trouble to convince the law and us that Charles, Scott, and Roro were killed in a car crash.
How can you be certain?
I've staged more than a few accidents in my day, boy. This has all the year markings.
Should we tell the police?
No.
Wolverine now reaches a hand up to his ear and activates an earpiece.
Kurt, what you got?
Above, in a tall tree, hidden from sight and looking over it all.
Your hunch paid off, mein Freund. A car parked across from ours just after we arrived. Two checked out the car. Now they're watching and waiting. What's our next move?
Let's nail the bastards.
Inside the car, a female purifier looks through binoculars.
No sign of the muties.
Relax. There are purifiers covering every exit from the park, plus our members among the police units inside. Whichever way the X-Men try to leave, we'll spot them.
I wish something would happen.
You got it. There's the big one, Colossus. But he's in costume.
The woman is startled as something blue and red blocks her vision. She puts the binoculars down and sees...
Boo!
Holy!
The purifier reaches for his gun, but it's too late. The door of the car is slashed by the claws of Wolverine. With a swift motion, the door is ripped open.
Hit the bricks, bub. You, your lady friend, and me are gonna have words.
The man thrown from it and knocked out with a swift punch.
You folks are lucky I made a promise to Storm, or I wouldn't have been so nice to hit you without my claws.
We can't allow ourselves to be captured. Better to die instead, and in the process, take some of them with us.
Straddling the front seat, the woman grabs the wheel and stamps on the accelerator. The car pulls off, with Nightcrawler still on the hood.
Whoa! Zum Teufel!
But ahead, a man of steel steps in the way.
If I try to evade them, they will follow. On the busy street, innocent people are sure to be harmed. That I cannot allow.
The car's building up too much speed. If the woman remains inside when she hits Colossus, she'll never survive the impact.
With a puff of smoke, the blue mutant appears in the car next to the woman, grabbing her.
My apologies for ruining your imminent martyrdom, Fraulein, but you're coming with me.
Living steel meets a man-made object, yet only one can survive. The car loses. Colossus finishes the wreck by picking it up and slamming it down with a mighty heave.
Either I am getting stronger, comrades, or automobiles are not so sturdy or powerful as they used to be.
As Colossus chuckles, he does not notice as two armored units approach from behind him.
Reinforcements! Colossus, look out behind you!
Port over there, Elf. Tackle him!
Yeah, you do that, freak.
With a blast from a strange weapon mounted on his arm, the purifier takes Colossus down.
We'll tear you apart as easily as we dropped your tin-plated pal. And how about that? He's still twitching. Hang on one sec. One more shot, put him right out of his misery. Ah!
I think not.
The two armored men are raised up into the air. Their armor is torn from them. Supposedly indestructible battle suits shred like paper. Then, the same energies which stripped the purifiers now imprison them. They drop down to the ground in metal cocoons.
I don't know if we should be grateful or run for our lives.
You.
Sheathe your claws, Wolverine. I'm here as a friend. And if you'll have me, an ally.
Upstate, Kitty and Ilyana wait in the bushes.
I'm bored.
Yeah. We may as well go inside and phone the... Hold it! Someone's coming!
They look like they mean business. Do you recognize them, Kitty?
Nope.
Can we go now?
The They'll spot us. I'm afraid we're stuck here till they leave.
I'm afraid. Period.
Well, Rocco?
On it, boss. Won't be a sec.
I'm gonna go scout. Stay here.
Be careful.
Taking a deep breath, Kitty phases down into the hill beneath her and starts across the clearing. It's a lot like swimming, only Earth is far stranger for her than water, and she can't see where she is going. She hopes she reaches cover before she runs out of air.
All set, air. I'll run a 360-degree security sweep before we go. Wait! A contact!
The three turn and look straight at Ilyana.
There! Oh no!
Get her!
Get the...
The girl runs, but charges head first towards the barrel of Ant's gun.
Ooh.
End of the line, my dear.
That was a gunshot! All the commotion! Ilyana! No!
A mutie. And is she dead?
Stunned, Rocco. She might be useful. Put her in my car.
Kitty, meanwhile, stays phased so as not to be detected, using it to almost walk on the air above.
Oh no! It's my fault Ilyana's in the mess. It's up to me to rescue her.
The girl's bio readings are neither exactly human nor mutant. I don't know what to make of them, but I'm certain the Reverend will want to investigate further.
As the car starts to pull away, Kitty thinks fast and faces herself down and then through the car's trunk and rests so as to sit inside it.
Well, well, an intruder. Evidently, our young friend has a playmate. A dose of nerve gas should teach her what happens to curious kittens.
As one set of players exits Xavier's estate, another makes its entrance. The three remaining X-Men now in the library with Magneto and their two steel-encased prisoners.
You'll get nothing from us, Mutie.
Wanna bet?
We're prepared to die.
Wolverine holds his claws up to the first man's face with one hand, placing his unpopped hand under his jaw.
I'm glad to hear that, darling, because you're real close to getting your wish. See these? Remember what they did to your car?
He pops one claw right next to his face on one side.
That's one.
Another on the other side.
That's two.
The last middle is right under his chin. Logan pushes his hand in.
Wanna go for three? Okay, hero.
Wolverine.
Your choice. Your funeral.
May I suggest an alternative?
Your lucky day, pal.
I doubt that.
I'm not afraid to die.
Perhaps not.
The purifier resists, but the outcome is never truly in doubt. Magneto uses the metal all over them as a weapon, not to kill, but to inflict the worst kinds of pain. First he, then his companions, tell all that they know. They serve the Stryker Crusade, whose goal is the complete and utter eradication of mutant kind, and the means to achieve that end will be the man who has dedicated his life to championing the cause of Homo Superior, Charles Xavier.
One more genocide in the name of God. A story as old as the race.
Was this necessary?
Yep.
New York City, the Empire State Building. On the roof of what was once the tallest building in the world.
And they bring him unto the place Golgotha.
Charles Xavier does not believe what he sees to be real. That does not save him. He watches as his X-Men drag a destroyed body towards a cross, nailing him to it.
And they crucify him.
As he hangs there, held up by a monstrous version of Colossus, they come. In turn, each X-Man, past and present, comes, shadowed, terrifying versions of them. They come to pay their respects. Finally, Storm laughs as she raises her arms and targets a blast at his metal cross with lightning. It acts as a lightning rod, the victim now an ashen corpse.
Enjoying this, old man? You should be, considering you shaped us in your image. We lived and fought for you, Xavier, and in return you gave us nothing but death and dishonor. The debt's long overdue.
Instead of optic blasts, a miasmic fog erupts from Cyclops' eyes to enshroud Xavier like a lover, as his beloved students do unto him, as they believe he did to them.
Behold your creation, Charles Xavier!
They have become creatures of ultimate evil. They seek to make him so. He no longer resists. For if they are made in his image, is he himself not evil incarnate? Then, when all seems lost, a light of purest silver pierces the heavens. At its touch, the demonic X-Men are consumed. Their grieving mentor freed from his bonds, his wounds miraculously healed. In awe and wonder, he looks up, to behold a man in pure white robes, a kind man, a hand held out in friendship. Still ignorant of how or why this has come to pass, only now no longer caring, Xavier reaches out to the stranger. At the last instant, though, doubt flares within him. A little thing.
No! No. No.
But more than enough to hurl him once more from the grace he craves and into the abyss.
Damn. We nearly had him that time. Status report update. Subject suspended in isolation tank under total sensory deprivation.
The doctor watches from a control panel, overlooking the tank in which Xavier is in. A device placed over his head and eyes. The water masks his screams.
His disorientation intensified through the use of drugs and direct physical stimulus of the brain via implanted electrodes. Mind wash procedures initiated 15 hours ago.
The doctor reaches down and takes a cigarette from a pack.
Results? Encouraging. However, his resistance is far more determined than I expected.
A light, Philip?
Thank you, Reverend.
Don't despair, my friend. We knew from the start this wouldn't be easy.
I'm not worried about breaking him. It's doing the job properly within your time limit. Care to see our other guests?
With a click, a light reveals Scott Summers and Aurora Monroe tied to upright devices of their own.
Those devices they are in not only neutralize the mutant's abilities, but they psionically link them with Xavier. The drugs we administered heighten his psychic sensitivity to the point it's impossible for him to screen out their thoughts. We torture them, and Xavier suffers. He's aware of the pain comes from them, and in his confused state believes they're doing it deliberately. His own subconscious fears and guilt provides the rationale for their betrayal.
Stryker.
We have done you no harm. Why are you doing this?
Because you exist. And that existence is an affront to the Lord.
He looks at the two X-Men and remembers. He thinks back to a simpler day, 30 years ago.
There was no crusade then. I wasn't even a minister. Quite the opposite. Master Sergeant William Stryker, U.S. Army Rangers, as tough as nails, hell-raising professional soldier. I was on special assignment to the military nuclear testing program. The brass told us the danger was minimal, and we believed them, even when we became pregnant. When my tour was over, my wife Marcy and I headed south to visit my family in Phoenix. We never made it. Alone, in the middle of the desert, I delivered my son. But he wasn't human. It was a monster. Faced with that abomination, I did what had to be done. I had my knife. I used it. and when Marcy, half conscious, asked for her baby, I took her in my arms, held her close, and broke her neck. The car had been leaking fuel since the crash. It was a miracle there'd been no explosion. I planned to change that. I placed Marcy inside the wreck, her baby in her arms. I climbed in beside her and lit a match. But my plan was foiled. I survived. I was found.
Easy, fella. Don't try to move. The ambulance is on its way. You're a lucky man. That explosion blew you right clear. You're gonna be all right.
Marcy and the monster were burned beyond all recognition. None knew my shame but I. And try as I might, I couldn't forget. I was a war hero with a Class A record, so the Army turned a blind eye to my drinking and fighting. I'd suffered a terrible loss. They were prepared to be patient, to a point. I was discharged. I touched bottom without even the guts to kill myself. Then I saw a magazine article about Charles Xavier, about mutants. After months of torment, I knew what the monster was, a mutant. But could I have fathered such a creature? Was my life so wicked that the Lord sought to punish me through my son? And if so, why then let me live? If I was evil, shouldn't I have been condemned to eternal damnation? I prayed for guidance. It was given to me. The evil, the sin, was Marcy's, not mine. She was the vessel used by God to reveal unto me Satan's most insidious plot against humanity, to corrupt us through our children while they were still in the womb. The Lord created man and woman in His image, blessed with His grace. Mutants broke that sacred mold. They were creations not of God, but of the devil. And I had been chosen to lead the fight against them. From that lowly beginning came ministry. For a quarter century, I labored in the wilderness, amassing phenomenal temporal power. Now, at last, the moment has come to put those resources to use.
How did you learn of the X-Men?
Xavier initially founded your group under the auspices of the federal government. His liaison was FBI agent Fred Duncan, a senior official of the Bureau. A devoted member of the Crusade passed copies of Duncan's files on to me. The more I learned of your professor, the more convinced I became that he is the Antichrist, the supposed friend of mankind, who will lead us instead to our destruction.
I still don't understand. If we're such a threat, why haven't you killed us?
Oh, I have my reasons, young man, which you'll learn soon enough, to your regret. Yes?
Anne here, Reverend. We're en route from Xavier's school. I need instructions concerning my prisoners.
I trust your judgment about Colossus's sister.
And the Pride Girl.
Kill her.
No!
When the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 2. Let's continue, Philip. It's getting late.
Kitty!
X-Men Season 3, Episode 2, God Loves, Man Kills, Part 1. Narrated by Brandon Hunt. Starring Rex Anderson as Wolverine, Tari Peterside as Storm, Ryan Lawton as Nightcrawler, Joey Solis as Colossus, Maddie McGuinness as Kitty Pryde,
Omri Rose as Cyclops, Keith Seymour as Angel, Jason Rivers as Professor Charles Xavier, Daniel Earl as Magneto, Steve Porter as Reverend William Stryker, Andrea Billups as Stevie Hunter, Su Ling Chan as Ileana Rasputin, Victoria Savage as Anne, James Holyoke
as Philip, Shane Cochran as Rocco, Rick Pepito as Purifier 1, Oscar Stavemeyer as Purifiers 2 and 3, Elena Van Aandonk as Purifier 4, Solomon Chertok as Danny, Christine Pachowski-Gentile as Jess, Joey Sawless also as John Cheever. Music by Declan Gilgallon. Written by Chris Claremont. Adapted by Carl Dutton. Edited and produced by Carl Dutton. Main theme adapted from the original by Ron Wasserman. Sound effects sourced from freesound.org and pon5.com. X-Men and all characters therein are copyright of Marvel Entertainment and Disney. This is a non-profit fan production with no affiliation and no copyright infringement.